Okay, moving on in the programme now, and as many as 2,000 older people in Ireland die needlessly because of the cold every winter, and many others spend the time lonely and isolated, unable to heat their homes and struggling to get out and about. Back in 2008, Age Action came up with an idea which saw people knit little woolly hats, which then went on to smoothies. And for each one sold, money then went directly to Age Action. That initiative continues, and to discuss this, we're joined on the line by Eamon Timmins of Age Action. Good morning to you, Eamon.
Good morning, Greg.
This has proved a very positive initiative, but before we get to that, let us reflect on the struggles of many of our older population, particularly as we come into these long winter nights that are cold.
Yeah, I suppose we regularly do pieces throughout the winter with Highland trying to raise awareness of the challenges which the winter poses for older people. And one of the big challenges, well, we all have to stay warm during the winter, it is a bigger challenge for older people, or some older people, for whom heat is, they have a greater need for heat. And I suppose the people we are most worried about during the winter are older people who live alone, those on very low incomes. Those very often are living in poorer housing stocks, or whatever heat or energy they buy, it doesn't stay in the house as long. And then we know that one in four people who struggle to heat their homes to a safe level have a physical disability or something which restricts their movements, a physical problem which restricts their movements. And for those people, that is the winter can be quite a difficult time trying to stay well and warm. And heat is very, very important for to keep all the people well and healthy through the winter.
And we've all heard of those horror stories, which are all too common, of older people going to bed early, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening in some cases, to try and stay warm and to avoid putting on the heat if they have it, or sitting in a kitchen with the oven door open. These are real stories.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when older people tell us these stories, and they've told us these stories around the country when we were doing research for the budget this year, they say fairly stoically, they don't make a big issue of it. From our point of view, we're saying, look, it really does seriously restrict people's ability to live and have a quality of life. If people are going to bed at 7 o'clock at night to stay warm, or staying in bed to stay warm in the mornings, or going to bed in the middle of the day. Where it is dangerous is that we know from all the research that when the temperature in a room falls below 16, or below 18, there's an increased risk of respiratory illness. When it falls below 16, we're getting into a very dangerous zone. When it falls below 18, below 12, the blood begins to thicken, and there's an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. And so when we talk about these excess winter deaths, of somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 excess winter deaths each winter in Ireland, it's very rarely is it hypothermia. Invariably, it's heart attack, stroke, and respiratory illness that's killing people. Essentially, they're dying because they can't afford to heat their homes to a safe level. So, excuse me. So really what we try and do, and where the money from the Big Knit goes, is towards our care and repair program and our information lines to try and get information out to people. Our care and repair teams go out, they do small DIY visits and DIY jobs. Small jobs like changing light bulbs, changing the batteries in the smoke alarms, fitting handrails, tacking down carpet, fitting draft excluders on letterboxes or the foam strips on doors and windows, trying to make people's homes as safe and as efficient as possible for the winter.
And this has been an initiative, a drive that's really been embraced by the public. So far, 325,000 euro hats have been knitted and put on the top of smoothies. They've been sold, obviously, raising 100,000 euro, which goes a long way to carrying out some of the work that you've just talked of.
Yeah, I mean, the thing started 6 years ago in Ireland. It had been running in Britain for about 10 or 11 years, and it's also innocent. We're also doing it on the continent as well. So it is it's a remarkable kind of fundraiser in that sense. It's very colourful. It engages a lot of people. People knit all year round for us. We've already got the hats are coming in this year. We will need the hats coming in because we have a target of 65,000 of these little bottle top hats, which we have to have knitted before the 12th of December. Now, the listeners of Highland have always been very, very good to us. I know the number of the radio stations compete against each other to see who can knit the most hats. And I tell you something, Donegal is really, really fantastic. The listeners have really been marvellous.
We want to top the league again this year. So how do people get involved?
Well, the patterns for the Big Knit are on the website called www.thebignit.ie, and there's fantastic patterns on there, fantastic inspiration, pictures and ideas. We're aware that many older people are not online, and if they do need the pattern cards and they're not online, they can phone us. It'll be Monday morning now before the offices are open again, but from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, it's a Dublin number, 475-6989. That's 475-6989, and we'll post those pattern cards out to them.
And if there's a younger member of the family who has access access to the computer, print a couple off, go round to your granny and granddad's and do it together.
Yeah, and it's been some fantastic intergenerational work there. It is quite incredible how knitting brings people together. Certainly older people passing on the skills and the talents, and younger people passing on some of the crazy colours and designs. And, you know, it really is, it is a sea of colour when you see these hats come in. They will go on the bottle tops in the new year in February. Believe me, you won't miss them when they're in the shops, because they jump off the shelves with the colour. And for every cent, for every bottle that's sold, Age Action will receive 30 cents a minute.
And while there are, you know, patterns there to determine size or whatever, people often use their own artistic license. We often get them sent into the station here as well, and then we forward them on. But what is the process, generally speaking, when people have their little hats completed?
Well, they can, ideally for people in Donegal, to get them to Highland, to get them to the station, and they will deliver them down to us. If they can't do that, or if they're living, maybe if they're listening to us on the internet, or they're listening to us abroad somewhere or another part of the country over the web, they can send them to the Innocent Big Knit, Fruit Towers, that's the address, believe me, Fruit Towers, 120 Lower Baggage Street, Dublin 2. So it's the Innocent Big Knit, Fruit Towers, 120 Lower Baggage Street, Dublin 2. Or they can send them to Age Action. We will also get them, you know, we'll get them.
Yeah. But for the majority of
people... Then they get them put on the bottles.
Indeed, for the majority of people listening, it'll be far handier to get them into us here at Highland Radio on the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. It's always fun to see them come in because you see such variety and such fun in them, and then you know that they're going on to raise money for such a fantastic cause. Eamon, we hope you smash through that 65,000 target this year.
Well, thanks, Greg. And we really do appreciate all the support we get from the listeners in the Highland. It's always really, really encouraging to see the response from the people at Donegal for this fundraiser.
Eamon Timmins, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks, Greg.
Now, your comments coming in so far today. Another person wondering if we'll ever get that squeaky seat fixed. It's a work in progress. The wheels move slowly, but we're definitely going to be addressing the issue. David says, well said, Greg. It's true, we only get involved when it hits us. Now they do great work, but not quick enough. Well done for asking the right questions and a great show. Thanks very much, David. That's in relation to the Ebola situation. Texter says, I heard Damien Dowds on Highland Radio yesterday telling people to turn on their taps and run all the reservoirs dry. Surely this is madness to encourage people to waste water. In fairness to Damien, he didn't quite say that. What Damien actually said was that's what people could do in an anarchist type response. So he certainly didn't endorse that. I think it would be unfair for me to say that he did, but he suggested that, you know, could that be the end game? And I think that was the question that he was asked. But listen, I wonder, we didn't get much reaction to that yesterday in terms of whether people would be for or against it, because it's perhaps just such an out there suggestion. But having had 24 hours to digest it, could you see such a situation happen where people put the pressure on the government by running the reservoirs dry? I don't think many people would endorse it. Maybe they would. 086-7700-555 is the text line, or call us on 0749-125000. Another texter says, it's tax after tax, and it's time for the people to go on the street to convey that message. End of is end of to this hopeless government. We need a people's government for a change. And I wonder, the next major protests are on November 1st. I believe there's one being organised for Letterkenny. It'll be very interesting to see the turnout there, particularly post-election, to see, or post-general, post-budget 2015, or 2015, as some call it, to see, you know, has that softened people's attitude to it, or is it strengthened the resolve of people? We'll know November 1st. Hi, Greg. I think we should all get our water analysed, and if it's not up to scratch, we don't pay for it. That's an interesting one too, because, you know, we do know there's been some independent analysis of water in the county lately, and it's shown that, you know, it's well above international standards. But it's the EPA that tests the water, and I think that's what governs Irish water. And there can be a glass of water that is officially okay to drink, but you wouldn't put it on your body, let alone in your inside it. But that's going to play out, of course. Another texter in, first time texter, saying that I enjoying your show, impressive discussion in your newspaper, and paying tribute there, or giving credit to Claudia. So thank you very much for that. Was it not Councillor Patrick McGowan who raised the issue of speed limits outside schools and the council housing water changes? Not Claudia, can you not say his name? It was, of course, Councillor Patrick McGowan. I interviewed him myself for the news, and his interview is still available online. Claudia's a party colleague and a constituent of his as well. But thanks, Em, for giving us a ring and pointing that out. Hi, can you please play Hurricane Highway? From Sharon. We'll see if we can have a look at that. Just thought re Irish Water, Greg. Nobody should pay any water rates until the bonuses are done away with. And Greg, just missed what you said. Something to do with a new tax on electricity. Yeah, this is a new levy on, it's a renewable energy levy that's going on people's bills, €30 a year. So that will have to be taken an account of. I'm at 99.9% positive that that's the case. I think it actually comes into effect from tonight. I'm not sure if it's a one-off payment or staggered over bills, but ESB bills, electricity bills, I should say. Obviously, it's ESB, not the only electricity supplier. All electricity bills will increase by €30, as far as I understand. I'll get absolute confirmation on that. Now, I fear that you are the most intelligent person who's been on the radio, Claudia. Very well done. And if you're running for election, I would vote for you. On water charges, every morning my children go to school having showers. They won't be going to school clean anymore. Is it going back to baths on a Saturday night? How can four children have a shower in the morning? It's just going to be too costly. And, you know, I can understand exactly where you're coming from. Who would have thought that you would have to give consideration to when and how often you wash your children, but that's what many people are feeling. And on Ebola, if you feel unwell, you should present yourself at the GP. You should not be quarantined first off. Going into a packed GP office isn't the best advice. I think there's been something around about 60 cases of people presenting themselves with fears that they have Ebola. Thankfully, all have turned out negative. But, you know, the work is ongoing through our hospitals, through our GP's practices. And as I say, 60 odd cases so far, and all have proved negative, thankfully. OK, keep your calls, comments and requests coming through to 086 770 0555. That's 086 770 0555, or call the show if I'm waiting to take your call, 07491 25000, or you can tweet me on Twitter at Greg Hughes 2. Michael and Jolene are getting married today. In fact, this morning. It's probably underway now. Best wishes to you from Aunt Pauline and Uncle Pat and everyone in Rockfield and everyone here as well. Hope you have a fantastic day. For Alwyn McGoldrick and Luke Harding, who are getting married today, from Auntie Geraldine and also from Hugh. Hughie and Anna May, best wishes on your wedding day from Tommy, Nancy, Moya, John, Daniel, Noreen and Breege. For Anna May Larkin, who's getting married today, best wishes to you, Anna May, coming in from your friend Mary Sweeney. Still to come on the programme, we'll be hearing from Johnny Ward, playing that new character Paulie on Love Hate. Loads more to come as well. We were due to have Mario Rosenstock, no, we call him Chicken Stock, on the programme today. Unfortunately, due to situations outside of our control, that has been deferred. We're hoping to have him live next Saturday, so apologies for anyone who was waiting for that. It's just a certain set of events transpired that we were unable to get that resolved today. But he's up in Letterkenny next Friday, so I'm going to go and have an interview with him there, and we'll hear the crack from him then next Saturday. So something to look forward to for next week as well. But apologies for those who tuned in for that. As I say, just something completely outside either mine or Yvonne's control, or indeed Mario's. It's just something that popped up. Guff Gaffer starts at the end of the Guff Gaffer Festival, runs for a couple of days at the end of this month. David Raines, co-director. David joins us on the programme now. Hey, Dave. David.
Hi, Greg. I'm great, thanks.
How are you? You're very well. You've already got the answer to that question in before I got to ask it. It's great. International Documentary Film Festival that's going from strength to strength. It captures imagination, not just only in the area, the county, the region and the country. A lot of work goes into it, I'm sure, getting it all together, getting all the shows together and all the guests and what have you.
It's well, you know, as you said, we're going 7 years, and I think we built a name and a brand, and that's great. And I think even people start to know what Gugafa means now, which is captive voice. And you know, and I think, like you said, they know that we show really inspirational stories from all over the world. But every year, you know, the challenge for us is we've got to surprise people. You know, we've got to come back with better films, stories that matter to people. And that's, for me, that's the strength of what we do is, you know, we take these amazing stories to rural communities who are often overlooked. You know, they don't get to see these kind of films. And we show them films in locations that are unexpected. In this case, you know, in Malin Village, the most northerly point in Donegal, which is wonderful.
And very much in the running for the most beautiful part of the county as well. What's the ethos of Gough Gaffer?
Well, you know, we try to show films that matter. You know, we choose films that have an impact on people's lives, you know, so films that, you know, human rights films, social issue films, environmental films, but always great stories. So we choose the very best award winners from some of the top festivals in the world, like the Cannes Film Festival and Sundance Film Festival. And these are films that you won't see. You know, you'll never see them on television. Television show 45-minute documentaries. We show full-length feature films that where people, you know, they sit down. It's a cinema. It's not a TV screen. And they just enjoy the film. They enjoy the great stories, you know. I mean, you know, we've got a film this year which we've scooped from Netflix. It goes out on Netflix in mid-November. And we will probably be one of the last screenings in the world of this film in a cinema. And it's the only time that this film will be shown in Ireland. It's called Virunga. And it's about the last remaining gorillas in the mountains in the Congo. And they're threatened not just by poachers, but by big oil companies who are coming in trying to take over the land.
It's a double-edged sword. Sorry, David. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because, you know, like, it's fantastic that Gough Gaffer Festival is giving a platform and an audience for films like this, but it's incredible that really they're not more broadly broadcast in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Given
no,
the subject matter.
The broadcasters will not take feature-length documentaries. Mm. It's they think that they think an audience are not going to stay with the film. They go, oh God, you know, 90 minutes, can we really hold an audience? They'll be zapping, they'll be changing channels. And I think they're wrong, personally. I mean, I make feature documentaries. That's what I do, NASA and myself, for a living. And we believe that people actually love getting involved in a story and having time for the story to be told. So they get to know the characters. They get to know the world of the story. In television, you don't really get that anymore. You know, it's very fast. You see lots of interviews, lots of, you know, it's almost current affairs documentaries on television now.
And is it for a broad audience, this festival? I mean, sometimes when we talk about certain things, I know sometimes I can feel myself a little bit excluded that maybe it's not for me, maybe I'm not in the right circles. But this is for everyone. You want everyone
Greg,
to go.
It's absolutely for everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, we make sure that we program some films that are really family friendly. We've got a film called Happiness that's about village people in Bhutan who'll be connected to electricity and television for the first time, and it's all seen through the eyes of an 8-year-old boy who's training to be a Tibetan Buddhist monk, and it's a gorgeous film, absolutely beautiful. Families will love that. You know, they can take children of any age, and they'll enjoy that. You know, there's a film called A Goat for a Vote, which is about high school kids in Kenya who are trying. There's three of them competing to be student president, and you know, one of them's trying to bribe kids with a goat. Mm. So there's great funny films as well as the, you know, yes, there's hard-hitting films. You know, we've got controversial films. You know, we're showing a film called A Dangerous Game, which is about Donald Trump and his and people like him who buy huge, vast tracts of land to build golf resorts. Some people will say, well, great, bring on the golf resorts. And we feel, no, you know, let's preserve the environment. Let's keep those beautiful open spaces.
And let's have the conversation.
If
it sparks the conversation, you know, a lot of people don't have an opinion. So, you know, you talk about one extreme. Sometimes you can eliminate the extreme 30% on one end, the extreme 30% on the other, and then you can have the conversation in the middle. So even on that level alone, if it starts that conversation, it's something else for us to be talking about and discussing
and forming public
opinion. Any other highlights, Dave, you want to pick out for us?
Well, there's some great Irish films. A film called Blood Fruit, which is about another potentially controversial film because it's about the Dunn Stores strike when the girls who worked in the shop refused to sell grapefruits and oranges that came from South Africa in protest against the apartheid regime, and they thought that protest would only last a couple of weeks, but it went on for 3 years, and they were just ordinary young girls who worked in Dunn Stores, and they stood up for something that they believed in on the other side of the world. And it became, I mean, for those who were around in the 80s, they'll remember it was a massive thing.
And it was recognised by the people in South Africa. It had
Absolutely.
That impact.
Yeah, the South Africans were saying, this is fantastic that, you know, some young Irish girls are just standing up to protest about a big supermarket doing that. And we have a food strand this year. I mean, you know, that's one that touches on the political side. There's another one called Canned Dreams, which is about how a tin of meat ravioli, you know, like spaghetti, that kind of thing, how the products come from 15 different countries around the world, you know, and how they all make their journey, how they're harvested, or if it's cows, how they're kept and slaughtered in the abattoir, all the way back to when it comes to your can of ravioli that you pick up off the supermarket shelf. And, you know, that's a great film as well, you know, on the food strand. And we're going to have a food debate on the Sunday in Malin. All of this is happening in Malin. So those who are listening and don't actually know Gugafa, this happens in Malin Village. We build pop-up cinemas around the village green. We put a beautiful marquee on the green, and all of the activities happen there. Although this year we're showing a couple of films in Carndonagh, in Colgan Hall as well. But our food strand, we'll bring some food experts, some chefs, you know, some people who work in producing local food, and get them watching the films and discussing them, and, you know, talking about the issues around food production. I think that's really topical, Greg.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. Saturday 25th, Sunday 26th.
What? Oh, yeah, you're right. Starting Friday. Friday night is our opening.
It starts for opening Friday night, okay.
And Saturday 25th, Sunday 26th. Everyone welcome. There's music, food stalls, market, a lot happening in the village. So
and,
really hope all the Highland Radio listeners come out.
And as I say, such a beautiful setting. We'll hear more about it between now and
great.
Then.
But really
no harm getting the date in the diary. David Rainey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Now, moving on in the programme, one of the hottest names in Irish show business at the moment is Johnny Ward. He, of course, plays the new love-hate character, Paulie, and he joins us on the programme now. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us on the show. Firstly, you must be absolutely overwhelmed with the reaction this character's had.
Greg, I'm absolutely, you just said it there in one, absolutely overwhelmed. Love-hate was always something that I always wanted to be a part of, and I was supposed to audition for the first season. Now, you know, with the whole success of Love Hate, especially after the second season, third season, it just became something that everyone was speaking about. And that's why I just wanted to be so involved with it. You know, I couldn't get an audition there for some reason. And the very first season I was supposed to audition with it, but I was doing another film. That other film was called Dollhouse, directed by Kirsten Sheridan. Kirsten Sheridan, as we know, is Jim Sheridan's daughter, and the film was filmed in his house. And then, you know, season two, season three, season four just exploded on TV screens. I don't think there's ever been a drama that's on our own doorstep here in Ireland that everyone is talking about. You know, they're putting Love Hate in the same sentences as the likes of shows like Breaking Bad. And that's why it was just, you know, I was really, really looking forward to kind of getting in there for an audition. So I remember I just finished filming a series called The Centre, RTE comedy. And I went over to my girlfriend's apartment in London, a bit of a break afterwards. And my agent gave me a phone call. She said, listen, you're finally after getting audition for Love Hate. There's a new guy, the new part of Paulie, and you know, this is a big part. And I knew a few of my friends had auditioned for this part already as well. So I came back early. I got an early flight back. Just kind of locked myself away for 2 or 3 days, and just constantly kept going over these lines, going over with my mother and father, and you know, my friends as well, and just you know, so I was kind of prepared for any given situation. I went in then the next day, or 2 or 3 days afterwards, and I met David Caffrey and Steve Matthews, the producer, and David Caffrey, the director, and they seemed to like me from the first audition. Then I did another audition. Then I did another audition, and I was constantly being given different scenes. After about, I'd say, 6 auditions altogether, 10 days passed by, and I heard absolutely nothing. And, you know, I was devastated because I knew it was between myself and 2 other actors as well. And, well, that's what I was told. And then 10 days had passed, heard nothing. And I was doing a gig that Thursday night, woke up on the Friday morning, my agent rang me and said, listen, and it was just so quick, listen, you've got the part of Paulie, congratulations. I'm about to email you 6 scripts to you now. and you're going to do a read-through tomorrow with all the Love Hate cast. And it was literally as simple and as quick as that.
And do you have an attitude almost like something's happened for a reason, i.e. maybe you wouldn't have got such a prominent, such a strong role if you had have got that audition earlier on in the run of the programme?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you have to look at it in that positive way. You know, the whole kind of blessing in disguise thing. I'm not sure what part I would have gone for in the first season, but... then again, you know, I knew, with Dollhouse, Dollhouse at the time was obviously what I wanted to do. No one knew the amount of success that Love Hate was going to have. And, you know, it was a bit of a pilot, shall we say, with the first four episodes. And then when it just exploded, and, you know, I was like, oh, you know, but in so many ways, when you're saying that, you know, yeah, maybe everything happens for a reason.
But for you, do you sort of get a feeling that this, for a lot of people, may be new to you? It's like an overnight success that's, 20 years in the making. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people would be familiar with your work, but, you know, you're reintroduced and introduced to a new sort of a fan base now.
Yeah, you're dead right. I mean, you know, I said this to someone out there yesterday. Usually when you're working on a film or whatever, you know, you meet people there for the first time. This is who you're going to be working with. You meet the directors, the producers, and everything is new. You know what I mean? And no matter what the success, you have to. It can happen with the film. It might not happen with the film. But walking onto Love Hate, it doesn't matter. You know, with season five, I knew that it was going to, that everyone was going to watch this no matter what I did, you know, because it was with such high profile figures like Nage and Fran and stuff, you knew people were going to watch this. So yeah, that was extremely exciting. You knew that it was going to be a success already. And on top of that, it was really intimidating as well to just walk onto something like that. There was that whole kind of new boy in school syndrome going on as well.
But you must be delighted with how your character's been received. I mean, it's the talk of the country.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't be more chuffed, you know. And there is always that paranoia going in your head, you know. I hope I go down well with the, you know, the general public.
Yeah.
And you know, losing sleep as well. And one thing, we were supposed to have some kind of show and like a preview for just the cast. But the first time I actually saw the episode, and it was filmed back, you know, as long as March. That's when we started shooting it. And an awful lot of the scenes I've completely forgotten about. You know,
it's funny how it goes. Yeah.
Your heart is beating like 90 and you've no idea what's about to come next because you do, you forget. It's tough. But overall, I must say, yeah, I'm absolutely overwhelmed, with the comments that I've been getting by the general public. And it's great.
This is only really the latest in a growing body of work that you've already have under your belt. But some exciting stuff, some very different stuff coming up for Christmas. I understand you're taking the Peter Pan role in The Gaiety at Christmas. And along with your sister, you run a stage school for kids. How important are these other projects to you generally?
Very important, I must say. Yeah, very important. You know, I love acting professionally. I love acting on film. I love acting on stage. I love teaching acting. You know, I think it's important as an actor to be versatile, and that's why I'm looking forward to getting back into the Gaiety. I did the Gaiety Theatre there 2 years ago. We did Cinderella, and I was given the part of Buttons in it, and I loved it. You know, and there's this old saying in Dublin. You know, it's not really Panto until you go to the, or it's not really Christmas until you go to the Panto. You know, and I was offered the role of Peter Pan last February, a month before I started in Love Hate, and I said, you know what, yeah, it's going to be completely different, and it gives me a chance to be a bit more versatile as well, not just play the same part over and over again, you know. And also regarding the Talented Kids Performing Arts School, that's the performing arts school I run with my sister. What I love about it is, you know, obviously I want to be working professionally all the time, but if I can't, it's great to be involved with the same industry that I want to work in all the time, you know, and teaching kids drama, singing and dancing. And we're based in Kilcullen and Dawkin and Nace, and yeah, it's something that I really love doing, and it gives it's a bit of a break from, you know, it's completely contrasting from Love Hate, and that's what I love about the whole thing.
And very, very finally, Love Hate is a global success. It's on Netflix in America, Channel 5 run, it's on Netflix on mainland Europe. Obviously the latest series isn't yet, but do you be conscious of that in the back of your mind, that this is a fantastic opportunity to put yourself out there to producers and directors and casting agents that perhaps haven't seen all of your work?
Yeah, do you know what? I don't really think about it too much. I mean, I know it's been watched elsewhere, not only in Ireland. And look, if something happens like that, it happened previous beforehand. There was another project I did. I got to work with Sean Penn on a film where a director had seen my work on Dollhouse, and he had, you know, he I thought Dollhouse was just going to be shown in Ireland. It wasn't. And that's how I got the part in this, you know, to work with Sean Penn. So there is always that thing in the back of your mind, you know, you've no idea who could be seeing it. There could be LA directors here and want to cast me in their latest film. But to be honest, I don't really think about it too much, you know.
Well, Johnny Ward, can I say it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme.
Listen, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
This is Paul O'Connell for Pinergy. Our backroom is ready, our boots are ready, and now our whole team of budget controllers is ready to hit the streets and help you take control of your electricity costs. With Pinergy, the pay-as-you-go electricity solution. Get ready to switch to Pinergy and say goodbye to big electricity bills forever. Free phone us today on 1800 98 90 99. That's Pinergy on 1800 98 90 99 or visit pinergy.ie.
Pinergy. Electricity costs you control.
Do you have arthritis? Does it affect how you live day to day? Reduce your pain. Reclaim your life with an Arthritis Ireland self-management course. Our six-week Living Well with Arthritis course starts Tuesday, October 21st at 7pm at the Station House Hotel, Letterkenny. Register online at arthritisireland.ie or low call 1890 25 28 46.
Check out this week's offers at Meehan's of Raphoe. There's a free regatta fleece with every pair of Wrangler or Diesel jeans. New stock bootcut jeans only $29.99 or two for €50. And there's a large selection of cross-hatch hoodies for only $29.99. With tough work trousers, only $24.99 at Meehan's of Raphoe.
If you no longer have the freedom to move around without restrictions, at the Northwest Hearing and Mobility Clinic in Letterkenny, we're here to help. We stock a variety of European leading manufacturers. Choose from a wide selection of wheelchairs, bath lifts, grab rails, walking aids and much more. Visit our showroom on the Neil T. Blaney Road, Letterkenny, or call 912-0822 for more details. Northwest Hearing and Mobility, everyday living without restrictions.
It's going to be one mad day today at Heaton Buckley Letterkenny and their one-day madness sale from 8:30am till 5pm. Don't miss wood flooring from €5 square yard, 10 litres of Berger matte emulsion Brilliant White for €14, Hyundai 56cc petrol chainsaw only €179, 6.5 horsepower Pro Plus petrol pressure washer only €399, plus lots more discounted bargains at Heaton Buckley Letterkenny one-day madness sale, all day today till 5pm.
Switch to Pinergy, pay-as-you-go electricity and say goodbye to big bills. Free phone 1800 98 90 99 or visit pinergy.ie.
Pinergy. Electricity you control.
Quarter to 12, it's time for one of my favourite parts of the weekend edition, and that's when we get P.O. McCann in studio.
I think I should have been a comedian. You know?
No,
but no, looking forward to the day because Lisa McHugh's got
in studio.
She's in studio with me today. And she's got a new album, you know, and it's great to see her getting such a... Because she had a bad spell there for a while, you know, health-wise and all. And everything, their last two singles have done very well for her. And A Life That's Good, that's the title. So
is this her second album?
This is her second one.
This is the tough one for a lot of artists.
It is. Well, this would actually be her third, but the first one was done way back in the early days, you know. Yeah. But this one here is correct. This will be a big one, you know, to see. But I think with them two singles, the strength of both them singles, I think it's got it's a great starter for her, you know.
And great to have her in studio.
Oh, lovely to have her.
And hear the artists talk about the tracks.
Yes, correct. And explain to them and why they do the songs and so on. And now with this TV programme that she has on a Monday night too, like, you know, she's getting great exposure now. So as you say, this album here will be the big launch pad now.
Is there a glass ceiling in Irish music, PO, that sometimes you can bang your head off and it's hard to break through that?
Correct.
You really have to work
100%
hard.
Correct. And there's some brilliant bands out there that I hear there in Jersey's every Friday night, but just in the recording world can't get that massive big song. In fact, I was talking to Michael English about that on Friday night, and it's nearly impossible to get it. And the people that get it, well, good luck to them, because only for the top five or six bands, you know what I mean? They're keeping the whole thing going, and everybody else is hoping that next week it'll be my turn, you know? Yeah. So there is a glass ceiling, is correct. You couldn't have said it better.
Brilliant.
Than that.
And we look forward to that. Loads of great music. Just quick word from you. Gareth Brooks is talking about doing.
Yes, I heard that. I heard that. No.
Next year. No,
I couldn't see that. I can't.
Would you welcome him?
Well, I would love to see him any day, you know what I mean? But I would say there's a big financial problem in there, like, now. And it's even got worse, like, you know, this last way.
Excellent. Always great to chat to you, P.O.
Lovely, Greg. Thank you.
Show coming up after 12 o'clock. That's P.O. McCann, the legendary P.O. McCann, with perhaps the legend of the future, Lisa McHugh, in studio with him. I'm reading in the papers today that dog owners could be forced to neuter, muzzle or microchip their antisocial pet, or be forced to attend ownership classes. Failure to comply with the Dogbo, a play on the word Asbo, of course, could result in a criminal record and a fine. Owners of unruly and antisocial dogs could face fines of up to £20,000. This is in the UK, but you know, if the UK gets the sniffles, we get a cold. And they could be forced to neuter or microchip their animals. A new power is due to come into force on Monday. Could that be something that could work here in Ireland? The issue of dogs comes up time and time again. I know dog lovers and those who look after the dogs, it's like, oh, not again. But, you know, it's a conversation that we do have from time to time because people raise it. 086 77 00 555 is the text line for the weekend edition and every programme following it. And also, you can call Yvonne, it's not too late, 07491 25000. If you missed any of today's programme, just to let you know that it is available for listen back very shortly after we go off air, indeed, at highlandradio.com or through the Highland Radio app there. It'll come up in the news section. So if you didn't get the show and you want to hear it all back, we've had a interesting and lively show, I think. Well, then you can do it through that. Okay, we're going to be talking about private water schemes in Donegal being the envy of the international community. Can you believe that with all the talk of Irish water? That's on the way. Okay, well, we're going to talk water supplies now in County Donegal, but it's not anything to do with Irish water, because a group of international experts are coming to Ireland over the course of the next week to examine private water schemes, group private water schemes, that is. And to discuss this further, we're joined on the programme now by Brian McDonald of the National Federation of Group Water Schemes. Brian, tell us then what's happening over the course of the next few days.
Well, what's happening is that there's an international delegation coming representing water inspector people from Scottish Water, from England's inspectorate, England and Wales inspectorate, and predominantly from Galicia in the north of Spain, where they're anxious to look at the model that we have here in Ireland for privately sourced group water schemes as a model of rural water organisation within their own part of the country. So it's a recognition, I think, of the huge transformation and the positive work that was done by community-owned and community-run group water supplies, drinking water supplies here in Ireland. And in Donegal, we have some of the best group water schemes in the country. And indeed, the first scheme that we'll be visiting on Thursday, the delegation will be visiting, is in Bun, which is just north of Mallon, the Glengad area of Inishowen. And I know that the participants are very anxious to see this scheme. It's certainly, for my money, one of the very, very top in terms of management of a community resource. And from there, we'll be going to another exciting project in the afternoon. We'll be going to Mina Bool Group Water Scheme, which is in Dunluhia area in Gidor, and where a new treatment plant was provided and constructed for the community just last year. And it's another model of community endeavour. And finally, we're hoping to stop at Tawnawilly, which is near Donegal town. So it's a good news story. It's a recognition, I suppose, of the tremendous effort that these communities have put in over the years and in developing and protecting their drinking water sources and in building up the infrastructure to provide a quality drinking water supply to their members.
And that was Brian McDermott, who spoke to us just a little bit before coming on air. Now, we still have one more guest to come on the programme. But I just want to remind you of how you can stay in contact with us. You can email me during the week at any stage, greghughes@highlandradio.com, or indeed tune into me, or follow me on Twitter. I'll follow you back at greghughes2. Now, there's a great video that's appeared online featuring Donegal woman Jennifer Doherty flying a plane. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, how are you?
Very, very good, and a pleasure to speak to you again. Now, you are blind, Jennifer, so what made you decide to take on this challenge of flying a plane?
Well, I got an email about an organisation called Ability, and they were providing accessible flying lessons for people with disabilities. And I sent it on to my manager, because in the Donegal Centre for Independent Living, we work with over 100 people with disabilities. So I sent it on just, you know, saying she might know somebody who'd want to do it, not thinking of myself. And she wrote back and said, you know, you should definitely do it, kind of as an awareness thing, but also as a fundraiser for our organisation.
A daunting undertaking, though, for yourself personally. Did you have any doubts?
Yeah, at the start I was really nervous. Like, I really had to be convinced, because it wasn't something I ever thought about doing, but the manager, Rosaline's quite persuasive, so eventually she talked me into it, and actually was really glad I did it then.
And what was the process? How long did it take, or what happened to you on the day, or was it over a course of a number of days?
I travelled with my work colleague, Shane. We went to the Newton Arts airfield. We were supposed to fly at 11 o'clock, but because the plane is so small, you know, the sky has to be completely clear, so there's a bit of fog, and we had to wait until 1:30. So in the meantime, the air mobility staff showed me around the plane. So, you know, they let me feel just the wings and the size of the plane, and showed me how to check the fuel and the wheels and stuff. And that gave me a good idea of what the plane looked like, and it actually made me less nervous.
And did you get a strong sense of being in the air? And pardon my ignorance on that, but I presume people would be curious to know what the sensation was for someone who, you know, will not be taking it in through sight.
Well, when we took off, so it was a dual control plane, so the instructor had full control, and he took off and flew so far and then told me when I could fly, and I could feel if you moved, like, the handle for steering, if you moved it at all, you could feel which way the plane was going, so it was, you could feel exactly what you were doing. And him and Shane were describing, you know, the scenery and everything, so they were just describing exactly what was going on.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, a lot of it is about, as you say, it's a great, fantastic personal experience that you had that I'm dead jealous of. But it is also, though, about creating awareness of the fantastic organisation that you're involved with, and also raising money. Tell us briefly about that, if you don't mind. We've about a minute there, Jennifer.
Okay. Well, we provide personal assistance service to people with physical and sensory disabilities. And I suppose, like any charity, we're looking for money and, you know, fundraising. We kind of want to do it in a way that promotes positivity for people with disabilities. You know, do something fun and something kind of different. And by people watching this video, it's just making them aware of what our charity is and what we do. And it kind of, you know, just a different, fun, sort of lighthearted way. So that's kind of the main, you know, the main idea of it, really.
And has this set a spark off? Are you looking at other challenges now?
Well, you never know.
You'll take them as they come.
Yeah, it's made me think, you know, you kind of, and I know everybody does it, you think, I don't really want to do something. It's kind of, you know, I don't know if I can do it. And then sometimes you kind of push yourself a bit and challenge yourself and be glad you did something. So that's really what it's done for me, I think.
Yeah, excellent. As I say, I'm very jealous. How can people access this video? Is it on YouTube or...?
It's on the Donegal CIL Facebook page.
Donegal CIL. And then there's more information about the group there. And if people want to get involved or help or access the services, I presume that info's there as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Jennifer Doherty, always a pleasure to speak with you. Hopefully it won't be so long before we chat the next time. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay, that's all we have time for on the show today. Thank you so much to everybody who participated in the programme, particularly you at home, of course, or wherever you are today at work. I mentioned Gareth Brooks. Yeah, there was some speculation in the papers. A texter wants to know what was I talking about, that he may pay a couple of concerts in Ireland next year. We'll get more information on that and bring it to you.